Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 13th day of May, Anno Domini 2023. Ooh, happy birthday, Jerry. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, not to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. On Wednesday, Google held this year's I.O. Developer Conference, where they showed off their newest technologies and products. Here's a quick rundown of some of what was announced. AI, of course, front and center. Magic Editor is an AI-powered feature for the more complex edits in specific parts of photos. For example, the foreground or background can fill in gaps in the photos, even reposition a subject for a better framed shot. Magic Compose can be used with messages and conversations to rewrite text in different styles. Google has removed the wait list for their ChatGPT rival Bard and is partnering with Adobe to generate and modify images. Google's Workspace suite is also getting the AI touch to make it smarter. Music LM is Google's new experimental AI tool that turns text into music. Google is experimenting with an AI-powered conversational mode in Search. We'll see where that leads us. And the Play Store gets some AI love to help developers optimize their apps and translate them to other languages. I'd much rather see them use AI to get rid of the bad apps, but okay. The new Sidekick panel is a side panel in Google Docs that is constantly engaged in reading and processing your entire document as you write, providing contextual suggestions and even AI-generated imagery, summaries of written conversation, speaker notes, and more. That's not rolled out to everybody yet, so don't go looking for it immediately. They also announced new hardware, including the Pixel 7a, their latest affordable phone with much of the Pixel 7 flagship technology in it, the Pixel tablet, and the Pixel Fold, a new cell phone that opens like a book into a 7.6-inch tablet and actually costs less than a car. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google I.O. 2023. And your choices are, love the new hardware, more AI, please, excited for the photo editing, meh, and I love all of these choices. So far, we have 27 votes, and meh is pretty much in the lead right now. But, of course, you can vote in the poll at soundbites.org. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. It's interesting to me how far they're all going with AI. I mean, I get it. It's the new hotness.
Well, part of the thing was everyone's been working in this for years. Apple's had their neural engine for like 10 years now. But then the OpenAI, funded by Microsoft, comes out with ChatGPT, and oh, my God, that's the new – and then Google come out, and we've got that. We call it Bard, and everyone else is now coming out with it themselves. And there was a malware research team that used ChatGPT to try to analyze code, and it – knew existing malware and said, yes, this is malware, but it couldn't detect new strains of malware.
Yeah.
Because all ChatGPT does is it's a clever regurgitator.
Right.
Is how Steve Gibson described it.
Right.
It knows everything and it answers your questions in the form of a sentence. It'd be good for essays.
Right.
Rather than returning links like Google does. It's IBM Watson.
Right.
That was, what, 15 years ago?
There are other AI products,
yeah,
that can do that. ChatGPT is the wrong tool for that.
Yeah.
You know, just because it says AI doesn't mean it does everything. But I like that. I did. The Fold is an amazing little phone. It's a regular sized phone and quite thin. But
and
it opens like a book.
This is the fourth generation, so they're getting all the kinks worked out from
first
few.
Exactly.
How many times can you open and close it before it breaks?
Right.
Apparently, on the first model, it was once.
Yes.
Oops.
But yeah, so the those, you know, the everybody these days uses their phone for dang near everything. And so the ability to carry essentially a tablet around in your pocket without having a tablet-sized device in your pocket is going to be very seductive to some people.
And it
ain't cheap.
Yeah, it beats the iPhone. The highest end fold is $2,200 with a terabyte of storage in your phone.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're going to take enough pictures, I suppose that's what that's about.
That's stupid.
Well, it's more for video.
Yeah, you don't have a brand new baby.
4K video is really big.
Hello, there's the cloud. You can store it up there,
you're never going to lose them. You want it in multiple places.
Yeah, and who knows if that cloud company is going to go out of business. Right. That's why you pick a big one, you know, Apple, Google, Microsoft. They're probably going to be okay.
Probably. And Amazon.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's Amazon's principal service is cloud storage and web hosting.
Right.
Yeah. Storage for web hosting. It's
right. Everybody thinks, oh, Prime Video is their big thing, or delivering packages is their big thing. No. It's cloud storage and cloud services. Is there big moneymaker?
Mm-hmm.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Wayne from Rochester, New York. Hi, Wayne, what's up?
Well, I've been using LibreOffice, which I like, and I've been trying to use bullets. And the problem with the bullets is you don't seem to be able to move them around very well. Any ideas on what I should know?
You can... what do you mean by move them around?
Well, I've been working on a resume.
Okay.
And obviously you use the bullets to set things off. And I'm having a tough time placing them where I want them. Other than that, they seem to work out pretty well.
Do you mean left to right or up and down?
Left to right.
Okay.
There's an indent and... unindent, isn't there?
There's an indent and an unindent. You can either do it by placing the cursor at the beginning of the bulleted point, right?
Okay.
And then hitting tab. That will move it in another space. Shift tab will move it out a level.
So you're not actually using a bullet character. You're using a bullet style that sets up indentions and a word wrap for it.
Right.
You could just use a bullet character and forget about the automatic bullet formatting.
Sure. But if you want to use the actual bullet formatting, there's a second way to do it. There's a couple of characters on the icon bar, a couple of icons on the icon bar that will do the same thing. But the easiest way to do it is to just put your cursor at the beginning of the line, you know, in between the bullet and the first letter.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And hit the tab key. That will move it right one. And shift tab will move it left one.
It will
indent it one more level or outdent it one more level.
And sometimes you'll actually get a different bullet style. Instead of a filled-in black bullet, you might get a hollow white one or the weird squiggly things. And
right.
Depending on
what level you're at.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'll try that out, and hopefully everything will work out.
Yep, and good luck. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's... there's a lot. The problem with all of these things is they're very powerful, but many of the powers are hidden.
Yeah.
How do you tell everybody everything they do? Well, that's why there's help and manuals and, you know, all that stuff.
And that's the joke about Microsoft Word is if you turn on all the button bars that have all the functions visible, there's no place left to type.
That's exactly right.
There's too many functions.
Too many functions. Not enough screen space.
Well, your screen is just too small.
That's the problem. There are some monitors that turn to be portrait.
Yep.
So if you're a writer, that's a beautiful thing.
And then back to landscape for spreadsheets.
Right. Exactly. All right. Nope. That's not right. That's not even close to right. That's right. All right. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I have a question concerning virus protection, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Everything I have is Apple Universe, phone, iPad, desktop, et cetera. Is it necessary to have virus protection, et cetera, on a phone or the iPad? And I can hang up and listen online.
All right, thanks.
Basically, yes, because Windows viruses can attack you. It's almost less necessary on the phones because the apps are vetted before they get to you. But every now and then, both Google and Apple find bad apps and remove them. So it's not a bad idea to do that as well. And the big problem now isn't really viruses, which are self-replicating programs. It's malicious software that sneaks in claiming to be something else. In fact, that critical one we talked about on the Mac last week, you know, you get a message saying that you have to install this software, and you think it's real, and so you do, and now you're screwed. The problem is, back to AI, that the antivirus and anti-malware companies know about current stuff, and as soon as a new one is found, they get added. In fact, Malwarebytes is one of the big researchers in finding malware. But they all try to do heuristics. Heuristics was the old word. Now,
right.
Now it's AI. To try to determine what a virus-like function is. One of the biggest things you can do, Mac or Windows, is don't run as an administrator. And on Windows, that's sort of done by default. If you want to be an administrator, you have to elevate yourself. But on the Mac, every account you start on a brand new Mac is an administrator. Administrators have rights to install software. So you can go to a legitimate website that has a malicious ad, and that ad can download and install software because you're the administrator. I forget which company it was, but somebody determined that you can stop 95% of all malware and viruses by not being an administrator.
Yep.
So if you are an administrator on your Mac now, make a new account, make it the administrator, and then turn off administration on your account that you use all the time. Make it back to a standard account. It is a little annoying when you want to install something new because you have to type the administrator name and password. But most people don't install new things that often.
That often. And the amount of protection you get is way beyond the little bit of annoyance of having to type in a username and password.
Yep. So it's always especially ironic when the bad guy doesn't take that extra 10 seconds to do a browser detect. And so you get a message from Microsoft saying that your Mac is infected with a Windows virus.
Right.
Just literally 10 seconds, they could have done a browser agent check and brought up the right icon.
Right.
But they found that they don't have to because they trick enough people with the wrong words and the wrong icons. You make the message scary enough and people will get tricked by it because we're programmed to obey signs. And this big sign comes up and says, call this number, you're infected. So you do.
Yep. And that works for your Mac, but on phones, it's an entirely different deal. With phones, first thing you want to do is be very careful what you install.
Yeah.
Second, be very careful what you open. I don't know if Macs do this. Google, if you're using Google's messaging system, they do an awfully good job of detecting spam and
spam
viruses.
Calls and everything else. Right. Yeah.
Every now and then, a new maliciously formatted message makes it through. Right.
They have the same issue that Apple does.
Yep.
They know what the old stuff is. They have to learn what the new stuff is. And I get that, but they still are incredibly good at it.
Yeah.
In my various Google-based accounts, I get almost no spam. And in my non-Google-based accounts, they're full all the time.
Yeah. Apple's iCloud Mail service is also really good, too.
Yeah. Okay. So so on your phone, you still have to be wary of calls you get, messages you get, texts you get, all of that stuff. And if you do your email on your phone, you got to be careful of that as well.
And Malwarebytes on the phone has something they call the browser guard. They also have it for the computer, where it looks at the websites you're going to try and make sure they're not malicious. And technically that slows down loading the website just a little bit. And if you go to a heavily formatted website with hundreds of links, like a newspaper website, it might be noticeable slower. But the safety and protection is probably worth it. It scans every single. In fact, Google does that a lot now. When you search for something, you click on the results in Google. Google gives you a bright red screen with text on it saying this is a deceptive website or something might be wrong with this website.
Right. There's also a program called WOT, Web of Trust. And that people will say, oh, yeah, this is an acceptable website. And, you know, you get 50,000 people saying it's okay and 4 people saying it's not okay or vice versa.
I still like the feature there on my Pixel, though. I get a call coming in and I don't know who the heck it is and I'm not expecting it. So I just hit that scan or screen.
Screen.
And it will screen the call and click. It gets hung up.
But yeah, you do, Larry, the thing is these machines are pretty good at doing all this stuff, particularly if you use a good antivirus or anti-malware program like Malwarebytes or whatever. But you still truly have to be on your toes all the
due
time.
Due diligence.
Yeah.
Due diligence is the key. I mean, because as we've said for decades, and it's actually decades right now, these virus writers and spyware and malware creators are always playing a game of leapfrog. We put up a barrier, they find a way to jump over it. We find another barrier, they jump over it. And it's been going on like this, like I say, for decades. Yep. And it's the way it's going to go. They're always going to look for holes because there is no 100% pure, non-hackable software. Right. It just doesn't exist. There's got to be a flaw somewhere because humans create it.
Marketing deadlines are more important than making the app secure. We can always update it later when we find a problem. Microsoft finds literally 100 problems or more in Windows every single month and on their patch Tuesday.
Oh, I would have said day.
Well, they may,
yeah,
but they only release the patches one day a month.
Right.
So every patch Tuesday comes out, and here's the next 100 patches that were fixed. And if there's a – is it a bill or just a talk – suggestion there about making companies liable for their problems, it's coming from a ransomware aspect that if you don't like the LastPass, we found out that the LastPass breach started from a 3-year-old exploit in a Plex server that a LastPass engineer had at home.
Yep,
and he took his work laptop home. They got into his Plex server. They got into his work computer. They got everybody's LastPass vaults. If you are or ever were a LastPass customer, all of your passwords are now in the hands of the bad guys.
Right.
And that's horrible. But it was a 3-year-old patch. People don't patch. Programs were not designed to auto-patch. That's slowly changing. And partly because there's no penalty.
Well, auto patching can be like a double edged sword, anyways. So, I mean, there's the good sides and the bad sides. As we've said also, that, you know, nowadays, Microsoft used to have beta testers.
Yeah.
Now they've got their whole audience as a beta tester.
Right. Yep.
They roll something out, and if it blows certain things up, oh, well, sorry about that. You know, roll back to the next previous version and
Every patch,
we'll try again next month.
Every patch Tuesday comes out and printing breaks.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's rough both ways. But it is possible to write provably secure software.
And that's
mathematically provably. It just takes a very long time and marketing people don't want that.
Yeah, but the thing of it is also, I mean, they can go ahead and, you know, fix this to fix that. And then it breaks something else because this some other program was tied into that.
So many interrelated dependencies.
I mean, the fingers and the weaving is so intricate that it's unbelievable. And we're just victims of it. There's just no getting around it. And that's why you've got to do your due diligence and keeping your stuff updated. Not clicking on everything that, you know, you get click happy and do go ahead and install everything. And then you wonder why this other stuff is showing up as a toolbar or this other program's installed. And you're sitting there saying, I didn't install it. Yes, you did. Because you were trying to get this other software installed so much or so fast that it had all this other stuff behind it. And you just clicked, yeah, go ahead.
Yep.
Yeah, computers were invented by engineers who wanted to tinker with things.
That's the truth.
And 50 years later.
They were entirely open source in the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a drawer full of code sitting next to the terminal.
Yeah.
And if you made something better, you were the rock star.
And if you were a LastPass customer, you might want to move to something else. I personally use EnPass. And the reason, one of the big reasons I use EnPass, well, the convenience that it's on every platform I own.
Same here.
But the big reason is that it encrypts your database locally. So if you do save it out somewhere on the web, it's encrypted locally before it gets moved up to wherever you want to put it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to put it in Dropbox or Box or iCloud or Google Drive or wherever you want to put it, you can do that knowing it's already been encrypted. Now,
the problem.
It only encrypts as strong as your password. So if your password is 123, don't bother encrypting it at all anyway. Yeah.
And the other problem that happened with LastPass is that as computers have gotten more and more powerful, the methods of encryptions have changed, and there's something called the iteration count. 20 years ago, LastPass had an iteration count of 1 because that was strong enough.
Right.
A few years later, they went to 500. Today, a safe iteration count is considered 600,000.
Yep.
And a million's better.
Yep.
LastPass never re-encrypted the vaults with more iterations. So people that have been using it, the people most loyal to LastPass and have been using it the longest time are the ones that are hurt the most because they have so many passwords with an iteration count of 1. Even if you have a good password, getting into it's going to be pretty easy. And if you have a bad password, they've already got it.
Yeah, they've already got it. So you really want to pay attention to what password manager you're using.
And go into your settings and upgrade the PBKDF2 iteration count.
That's exactly right. And if you're using something like EnPass, you can just save everything locally, but then you can't share it easily among your various devices.
Yeah.
But if you do save it somewhere, you can save it. You can share it to your own website. Nobody else has access to it. Or if you do share it to a public site like Google Drive or iCloud or whatever, you can use, and you should anyway, use a strong password that will then encrypt it real hard. So that's important. I gave a talk Thursday at the Jazz 9.1 University.
I got tied up at work. I wanted to come.
Well, thank you. But one of the things we talked about was passwords. And I put up a slide that said minimum of 12 characters. And then I looked at everybody and said, it's actually 17, but I didn't want to scare you. Yeah, you should have a password, a passphrase.
Yep.
We still use the word password, but it's passphrase. 17 characters. And that's, you know, numbers, letters, uppercase, lowercase, symbols, and everything. It
doesn't have to be so complex. It can be, you know, happy 34 monkey.
Right.
It shouldn't be because
we all know that.
Right.
We've said that for quite a few years.
Yeah, two or three words with some numbers and then throw a symbol in it.
Yeah, it's not hard to do. And if you're using something like EnPass, it'll create one for you.
Most of
my passwords are 64 characters long.
Someone came in the store today, and I haven't been able to check if it's reproducible. He has extremely long passwords like that. He was trying to log into something on his phone, and it didn't let him type that many characters.
Ooh. Yeah, and I mentioned that in the talk, too, if your site lets you do that. The one thing you've got to be careful of, if you use EnPass to create a Netflix password,
mm-hmm.
and then you actually have to type it into your television, be aware that that's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
you're going to be angry, or your wife's going to be angry, and she's going to make you do it, at least in my experience. All right. That music tells us it's time for a quick break. Don't get excited, though, because we're not really going away. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just a few.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 35 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. And yes, as we said earlier, it's Patch Tuesday week this week. Microsoft released software updates to fix at least 4 dozen security holes in its Windows operating system and other software.
So
wait, let me be shocked.
Not 100.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I said at least 4 dozen. And those are the major ones. Including patches for 2 zero-day vulnerabilities that are already being exploited in active attacks. And as of Wednesday, I'm sure there were a whole bunch of new ones that were being exploited after Patch Tuesday. First up in May's zero-day flaws is an elevation of privilege weakness in Windows, which has a low attack complexity, requires low privileges, and no user interaction. That's right. For the last at least month, people have been able to get in and at your machine without you even knowing it. The zero-day patch that has received the most attention so far is a secure boot security feature bypass flaw that is being actively exploited by bootkit malware known as Black Lotus. A bootkit is dangerous because it allows the attacker to load malicious software before the operating system even starts up. According to Microsoft's advisory, an attacker would need physical access or administrative rights to a target device. You think, well, physical access, nobody's got access to my machine. But remember, half of viruses out there get administrative access. That's the first thing they do. And therefore, they could install an infected boot policy. Microsoft gives this flaw a CVSS score of just 6.7, rating it as important. Most security researchers think it deserves a considerably higher threat score. In fact, both of them do. In addition to the 2 zero-days fixed this month, Microsoft also patched 5 remote code execution flaws in Windows, 2 of which have notably high CVSS scores. Another vulnerability patch this month that was disclosed publicly before Patch Tuesday is a weakness in Microsoft Outlook and Explorer that can be exploited by attackers to remotely install malware. Microsoft says this vulnerability can be exploited merely by viewing a specially crafted email in the Outlook preview pane.
You don't even need to click on it.
That's
just
right.
Just view it.
Just view it. Yep. And if you have the preview pane turned on, you are always viewing emails.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the first thing you should do on any email program is turn off the preview pane. So, again, we ask, are you up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. This also goes to what Larry was talking about, was asking in the first segment. You don't necessarily have to do anything to become infected.
Yep.
And that's true for every operating system, by the way. There is no
security.
Nobody's
safe.
Yep.
You have fewer malware hits on Apple, and you have even fewer on Linux, but it's still not zero.
Yep.
So you still have vulnerability.
Only takes one.
And
it only takes one to infect your machine.
Right. And you still have to be wary and understand what's going on there. And again, as Steve said earlier, don't run as administrator. That is the number one thing. It used to be that every operating system, you became immediately the administrator when you logged in.
Because you needed to be, because there was nothing there. You had to install everything else.
Right. You had to install everything, and to do anything, you needed to be the administrator. And eventually, Windows, Microsoft caught on. Linux, by the way, was never this way. Unix, Linux, Minix, any of those. You had a root user.
Yeah, there's a super user that's above the admin or below, depending on the way.
Right. There is a super user that is created, usually named root or something along that line, or admin, but usually root on a Linux machine, who is the administrator, but you never log in as that person automatically, except on a couple of fairly stupid distributions. But when you create a Linux distro where you load Linux on your machine, it asks you for a username and password. That is a non-administrator user. Now, you have sudo rights. That is to say, you can say, I want to do something administrative, and it'll come back and say, okay, give me your password. Prove you're you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. That's not really intrusive, and it still means that if something comes in and tries to take over your machine, it can't get anywhere. And so, you know, that's lovely. And then eventually Microsoft figured that out as well. Apple apparently still not figured that out. But
I have a feeling it's because of tech support calls. That if you're not the admin and it asks you for a password, we hear that all the time. I don't know what password it's asking me for. Well, it says in the box what password is it, but they don't understand it. So how many tech support calls would they get?
So in order to save tech support dollars,
yeah,
they make the entire operating system less secure.
Less secure.
I don't go for that. I just don't.
There was a famous story at Microsoft Mail Merge where the tech support people had a couch. And anyone who called in with a Mail Merge question, it was at least 45 minutes trying to talk them through it so you could go sit on the couch. Then Microsoft changed their support policies so that the engineering department that created that feature got billed back for the support calls on that feature.
Yep.
So you're going to make your feature a whole lot better if you
hit them in the wallet.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. But yeah, so if you're a Windows user on a semi-new machine today, you are probably not running as the administrator, although you can set yourself up as administrator, mm-hmm, and you should not. If you are a Linux user, you already know you're not the administrator unless you absolutely say, make me the administrator for this one thing. But on a Mac, you are the administrator, and you need to be very, very careful. As Steve says, make a second user and make that person not the administrator.
I'm trying to find some easy instructions on that.
Well, easy is a relative term.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm having a little trouble.
A friend of mine gave me his Mac a number of years ago. And, you know, while he was there, he was, you know, we installed me as a user. And I didn't think anything of it at first until the next day when I said, oh, I really should use this software. So I started installing, and it just installed. And I thought, what? And I went and looked and paid attention now. And I was the administrator. That's not right.
No, no.
I just found a tech note at Apple. Ways to avoid malware. Don't be the administrator.
There you go.
From Apple.
Yeah.
But they make you the administrator when you create your account.
Yes, yes, yes. So when you buy a new Mac and you first set it up, the first account you create, call it admin, call it root, call it Jamoke, I don't care what you call it.
The default is your name because on the previous screen you put in your name and address
and
stuff.
Right, but you can change that.
Yeah.
And so change it to something else and they are the administrator. Then use that account and set a strong password. But then when you're logged in with that account, the first thing you should do is create a new account with your name who is not an administrator. And it's
for all your day-to-day work.
For all your day-to-day work. And that means that if some malicious software hits your machine and says, oh, you know, I got to install this thing, it's going to stop and say, well, you don't have privileges. Let's ask the user for a username and password that is allowed to install this software. And if that suddenly pops up on your computer, you know you've been hit and you can say no.
If you didn't go looking to install a piece of software and something asks for your password, it's probably fake.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where, you know, like you said, even within Windows, you know, you set yourself up like the default is that they set you up as a user. You automatically go in and set a password for that and then create a guest account. Just keep it as a guest. That way you won't get it confused. Do I have administrative rights on this name versus that name? Just label a guest. And then use that. And let everybody else use that account. That way nothing's going to get in there. They can't go in installing stuff because you didn't give them the rights.
Yep.
And if they try to get into the administrative, they've got to know the password.
Right.
And if you don't hand that out, that's simple. You know, it's keeping your machine clean and less hassle for you, because now you're not fighting, you know, well, little Jimmy, he wanted to download this video because he thought it was real cool because his friends told him about it, and then the machine gets infected. Won't happen.
Yeah, we've been said that for years. Don't let your kids use your main account.
Don't let them use your main account, and don't let them use your work machine.
Yeah, make a separate account for the kids along you too, so you can limit their access. But you're actually doing that to yourself. You're limiting your own access so that something can't sneak in on your own account.
But that's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it just is. It is not terribly annoying to say, I want to install this software. Okay, prove you have the right.
Yep.
Give me a username and password. Takes an extra 7 seconds to type all that in, and you're on your way. It saves you every minute of every day other than that one.
Yep.
So, yeah, be aware that making yourself not the administrator of any system, running day-to-day as a non-administrative user is probably the best thing you can do to save yourself.
And in the Apple, there is a guest user by default. And one of the things it does is delete everything when you log out. So if you want a guest if a guest wants to read their email, they can log in as guest or just use your phone.
Right.
Left over from the olden days. And when you log out of guest, everything is deleted. We've had customers that don't quite understand that. They come in and say, every time I log out or restart my computer, all my files are deleted because they've been logging in as guest. They're ignoring their user account and clicking on guest.
Right, and that'll do it.
And when they log out, it says we're going to delete everything. And they say, okay.
Yep.
And they're surprised that everything got deleted.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dean, all the way from Los Angeles, California. Hiya, Dean. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thank you for being here for us dummies. I appreciate it.
It's our pleasure.
I have an iPad 8, and I have, like, several pictures and videos that I uploaded to the iCloud thing. But I noticed that when I tried to delete, I deleted one small video from my photo library to clear up space. They deleted from the library and also the iCloud. What am I supposed to do?
Well, that's the choice. You can sync your iPad to iCloud, so everything is the same. So if you delete it on one place, it deletes it at the other place. Or you can choose not to sync it so that you delete it on one place and it doesn't delete the other place.
Oh.
But if you turn off sync, you have to leave it off all the time.
Right. And then you have to manually plug your iPad into your computer in order to copy the photos to your computer or copy them up to the cloud.
Right, because it no longer automatically puts your photos on iCloud.
Uh-huh. So if I turn off the sync, then I can delete them from my iPad?
And they won't delete from iCloud, correct?
Right, but if you...
When you add a photo to the iPad, it won't be added to iCloud.
Right, you'd have to do that manually. And if you turn sync back on, it will then delete all those photos from iCloud that you deleted from your iPad.
I've always wondered how it knows they were intentionally deleted and deleted up in the cloud and not accidentally deleted and bring them back from the cloud.
Right. Well, if you're syncing...
It makes them the same, but which way is right?
Right.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the device you start on.
Okay. Well, yeah, I had them, like I said, on my iPad. But I don't have, like, a MacBook or anything. That's the only problem.
Well, that's fine. You can still do what we're saying, but you now have to remember when you take pictures on your iPad to put them up in iCloud by hand, because it won't happen automatically if you turn off sync.
So I don't need a MacBook to do that?
No, you can do that right from the iPad.
From the iCloud website.
Yeah, on the iPad.
Right.
Right.
Oh. All right. I'll try that.
So, okay. Good luck.
Let me ask you another question, though.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard of the Xiaomi Redmi tablet?
The who? I'm sorry.
It's called Xiaomi. It's X-I-A-O.
Xiaomi.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a very, very well-known Chinese company. Yeah. And they have the Redmi, R-E-D-M-I tablet.
Right, right, right.
I saw that, and it looked pretty good. Do you know if that's a reliable tablet?
People seem to certainly love Xiaomi, so I have not used one myself. But
I know Xiaomi phones are banned in the U.S. because of xenophobia.
Well, that was what I was about yeah. to say.
They don't meet the FAA CC regulations.
No, it's xenophobia. No, they're scared of Chinese companies.
So one of the problems that Xiaomi has is that they are a Chinese company. And right now, most of those Chinese exports are banned in the United States. So I'm not sure you could get a Redmi tablet.
I'm trying to see what OS it runs. It doesn't say right off the bat.
I saw it on Amazon, so
oh, interesting.
Maybe it's, maybe it's just banned for government employees. That could be.
Because I know China has quite a bit of problems selling ham equipment here in the States, both for the FAA and the FCC, because of it goes cross bands and that and doesn't stay within their
Apparently, frequency. We are behind the times. The U.S. has removed Xiaomi from the list of banned Chinese companies.
Nice. Well, there was that weird article, and I think it was Forbes, that claimed they found a spy chip on a motherboard. But never showed any proof, and no one could ever reproduce it.
Mm.
And they never said anything about it again.
Huh?
Right.
So maybe that's what happened.
It seems to be a pretty nice tablet. It's got thousands of reviews on Amazon, and it's rated like 4.6 out of 5. So
pretty good.
That's pretty doggone good.
Dolby Atmos built in.
Yeah.
Super high-res audio.
Right.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that looks like a nice 8,000 milliamp battery.
What's the price tag?
I haven't found it yet.
$250.
Well, you're on, but it is on Amazon?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Touch screen?
Yeah.
Oh, the Redmi is the phone. Sorry.
No, there's a Redmi tablet.
Yeah.
It's a tablet.
I was looking at the phone.
Yeah. Let's see. The 10.6-inch one, $219 at Amazon.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
Mm-hmm.
What OS?
There's no pictures of any icons. There's just pictures of it doing stuff. If there were icons, we could tell if it was Windows or Android.
Yeah, right.
Oh, here it is. Android 12.
Oh, this new one is Android. Yeah, Android 12. It looks pretty good.
128 storage for $219.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those look pretty good.
You think that would be worth investing in?
Well, if you're happy with your iPad, keep it.
Yeah.
But if you're looking to replace it and you've got limited funds, I think the Xiaomi Redmi would be a pretty good choice.
Well, I'm looking to replace my Asus. I have an Asus tablet.
Yeah.
Gentab. That's what I wanted to replace.
Oh, yeah. This should do it. It's got an awfully decent battery, a decent camera, not a great camera, but a decent camera. And, you know, it's got 128 gig of RAM and of storage and 4 gig of RAM. So that's pretty doggone good. It's a Wi-Fi only, no SIM card, so you can't put it on your cellular network, on your phone network, but that's okay too.
Most people use the hotspot in their cell phone for that when they're outside of Wi-Fi.
Has Bluetooth, USB-C. Looks pretty good.
Okay. Well, that's all the issues I had, you guys. I appreciate you taking my call.
Our pleasure. Thank you for calling. Have fun out there in California.
Bye.
90 hertz refresh.
Yeah, looks nice.
Yeah,
it's there are a lot of decent tablets out there right now. You know, they're not going to be super high end for that price, but then how much super high end do you really need?
Yeah, if you're just doing web surfing and email and photos, it's fine.
Right.
If you're editing Hollywood videos, you might want to get something better.
Right.
That was a big announcement from Apple this week. Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro are becoming available for the iPad later this month.
Right. Subscriptions.
$4.99 a month or $49 a year. So Apple's getting into this subscription game.
My next thing.
Didn't read ahead in the news.
Yeah. Tisk. Well, and in my case,
Didn't scroll ahead. There we are.
One of the things what was I going to say? It doesn't matter. Apparently, it doesn't matter. Oh, my tablet was like $70 at Walmart, but all I use it for is an e-reader.
Mm-hmm.
And it's perfect for that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not doing anything else with it. All right, our next caller is Steve from Greece. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I recently upgraded my desktop computer, which is very old. I upgraded the motherboard to a new-to-me motherboard, an Intel Extreme Board, and I cannot get to the BIOS. I think it's because I'm using a USB keyboard and I need a PS2.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't. So my question is about the connectors. Is it a straight conversion? In other words, if I buy a USB to PS2, I just plug it into the spot and it'll work? Or do I need some sort of converter on the...
Most of those adapters have the converter in it.
Yeah.
In the early days, most USB mice came with a PS2 converter because that was the switchover between USB and PS2.
Right.
It's odd, though, that USB keyboards have been so common for so long, it's surprising you can't get into BIOS.
Now, the only extreme BIOS things I've seen were on the Intel NUX.
Are you using wireless or wired?
It's a
wired
to USB
keyboard.
Yeah, that's on my NUC. I have a USB keyboard. It works fine.
Yeah.
So it's F2.
Right. Or
F12.
And I've tried both of those. I've tried F10. Tried F8.
Now, is it a little compact keyboard?
No, no. It's full. It's a gaming keyboard.
Delete key.
I'm thinking the USB bus isn't turned on until we start the boot.
Yeah, but once you see the Intel logo,
yeah,
you should be able to start tapping that F2 key.
Yep. I've done that. Believe me, my fingers sore.
Huh?
Delete key?
Pardon? What?
The delete key?
No, the F2 key.
No, delete key. Sometimes it's the delete key to get into the
or
BIOS.
Escape or F10 or F12.
Yeah. Well, when it boots up, it says F2 is the screen.
Yeah.
The screen tells you it's F2 to get into the BIOS.
And you're not using a Bluetooth keyboard.
No, I'm not using a Bluetooth keyboard. It's a straight USB plug-in.
I think there's something wrong with that motherboard.
All right, one thing you should try is a different USB port.
I've done that.
It says a disable fast boot in the BIOS.
Yeah.
How do you get into the BIOS to do that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, hold on, Steve. We got to take a break.
Yep.
But stay on the line. We'll get back with you. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but the first hour of the show is done. But there's another hour coming your way, so do not despair. Just relax, sit back, take a couple of deep breaths. Because a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe is coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and just a little bit more of Steve from Greece. And, of course, all of you. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. And, of course, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Take a bio break. Get yourself a beverage and a snack. But come on back for a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
on Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. At long last, well, final
we
cut.
Got a, no, we still got
the caller.
Oh, we still got Steve. Steve, I forgot all about you.
At long last.
That happens so often. I'm sorry. One other thing I might be able to tell you, I tried going into safe mode, the troubleshooting advanced, looking for a UEFI.
Yep.
That wasn't an option on the board at all.
Okay, so let me get this. Let me get the timeline here. When you start up your machine, you immediately start whacking on the F2 key.
Yep.
And it never acknowledges it.
Correct.
Ditto the F12, the delete.
Well, he said it. The screen says F2 for BIOS.
No, I know. I have my NUC has the same BIOS.
So it could be lying.
No, it works. But the thing is, on mine, the USB, it's a USB keyboard as well, and it works from the instant I turn the machine on. So are you sure the keyboard works?
Well, it's worked for decades.
That doesn't mean anything.
No, I mean, I can type.
Once you do log in, it does work.
Okay.
One of the things, well, make sure the F2 works. That's not an ordinary.
Right.
What can you do with an F2 to see if it works or not when F2 doesn't do anything in the OS? We found a tech note from Intel on what to do when if you can't get into the BIOS with F2. And one of the options is to disable fastboot. And that procedure, you don't use the keyboard for. You hold the power button for exactly right. You hold the power button for 3 seconds at exactly the right time.
Great.
4 seconds is right out.
4 seconds is right out. Similarly, too. F2, by the way, renames an icon. So
okay.
If you highlight an icon.
Oh, yes. And that does work. Cause I all rename right. them all the time.
So the F2 funk button does work. Because I could see that one button dying because you've hit it too many times.
Right.
I killed it.
So, yeah, I think our suggestion is to turn off fastboot, and Steve will put a link to that in our on our page.
Okay. One other suggestion I'd heard, I called my computer store, and he asked me if I was comfortable disconnecting the battery from the BIOS. I said, yes, I'm comfortable doing it. And then thought about it, and I'm not so sure I'm comfortable doing it. But would that reset the BIOS and do it?
Well, the battery is probably a little watch-type battery, and it would reset the BIOS, but we don't know if it would do it or not.
Yeah, for the most part, the BIOS or the battery just keeps track of the time. And.
But it does store your BIOS settings.
That's burnt into the chip.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I will give it a try, and
But, Steve, go back 1 second. As far as, like Steve was saying, though, as far as the clock, you know, I mean, if you were to take the case off, leave it plugged in, turned off. Those are the two critical things. Turn it off and leave it plugged in. That way you're grounding yourself.
Right. I've got a grounding strap, too. I can do all that stuff.
All right. Well, that's even better. And then just pop that little battery out. There's usually you can take your fingernail and there's a side little clip that there's a wafer battery. It's a 2032. You can pop that out, leave it out for 30 seconds, pop it back in.
Make sure it is a 2032. They usually are.
Yeah.
But make sure. Yeah. That's one about the size of a quarter. On a NUC, it might be smaller because they're so small.
Right. You don't have a NUC though, right? You've got a full size desktop.
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
It fills a half case.
Yep.
But take it out, leave it out for about 30 seconds, and then pop it back in, and then boot it back up.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, gentlemen. Hurry up and finish the show. You want to get outside. It's a nice day.
Yeah, it is there a nice day.
All right. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Yep, thanks. Yeah, most of the things you see when you search for this are on a NUC because it uses that same BIOS.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have a NUC and I have a USB keyboard, and it does work. But man, you got to be as it boots up.
Now, would multiple BIOS be BIOSes or BIOSIs?
BIOSes?
Yeah.
BIOSes.
BIOSes?
I don't know. Is BIOS Latin or Greek?
Yeah. Is it mice and moose or is it mice and mices?
Right. Mice and meese.
Mice and meese, yeah.
Right. I don't know. That's a good question. So finally, at long last, Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro have arrived for the iPad Pro. If I said Pro enough, no, because it's going to be out for you a lot more. The timing is curious, less than a month before WWDC and some 8 years after the iPad went Pro. But it's a welcome announcement that finally puts the iPad Pro on par with the Mac when it comes to professional audio and video work. But they won't come cheap. For the first time, Apple is introducing a subscription model for Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro. You can't buy it outright even if you wanted to, and it's doubtful Apple will ever offer a light version for a flat fee. Of course, this isn't the first time Apple has offered a subscription to one of its products. It sells a variety of services, TV Plus, Music, iCloud Plus, etc., as well as the Apple One bundles. But it has long been rumored to be exploring hardware and software subscriptions to boost recurring sales. Where have we heard this before? Microsoft.
Adobe.
Yeah, and Adobe. A Final Cut Pro subscription was referenced in a trademark filing years ago, and a hardware subscription service for the iPhone and other devices has been reportedly in the works for more than a year. So this was inevitable, if not obvious. Actually, we already have subscription services for iPhones. You buy an iPhone and you pay for it monthly, and then at some point you upgrade that iPhone and you just keep paying.
That's the iPhone upgrade program. It's not a subscription.
Eat your donut. Shut
yeah.
up.
Well, the heck's the difference?
Exactly.
Bean counters, no.
Bean counters, no. Well, the final, it depends on what pot it comes out of. While the Final Cut Pro goes into, and Logic Pro subscriptions make perfect sense in the iPad Pro, where people are less willing to spend hundreds of dollars up front on a single app, it's hard not to see the move as a sign of things to come. For the time being, the Mac version will stay as a one-time payment, but that seems unlikely to last. The last major update to Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro came in October of 2021, so they're due for updates, very possibly to version 11 later this year or early next. And I don't think anyone would be surprised if Apple switches to a subscription model. With low enough subscription rates, Apple could keep us paying forever if we want the best out of our devices. Instead of a $1,200 upfront cost, the future MacBook Air could cost something like $150 a month with Apple One and Final Cut Pro. Why else do you think Apple is getting into financial services? It all comes together, people.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro are trial balloons. If people balk at the costs, it's a relatively low-risk endeavor, especially since users have been making do without these apps on their tablets for years. But if they subscribe in droves, and I'm pretty certain they will, because if it's an Apple product, people just buy it. It won't be long before everything Apple sells, from the iPhone to the apps that run on it, will be a service. What do you think? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
They have iMovie and GarageBand are the free consumer-level versions.
Right.
These are the Hollywood-level versions.
Right. And the other two, GarageBand and whatchacallit, are very good for the average user.
Yep.
But if you're a pro, that's the whole idea behind the pro name, you want a product
better quality
that does a lot more. Yeah.
And especially because the iPad is getting to be more common as for like dailies.
Right.
And there have been cases where when they shoot a scene in a movie, they want to make sure they got everything right. And if they don't, they want to reshoot it right then because it takes a lot of money to bring all the actors and the sets and everything back. So being able to see on your iPod, your iPad, you can do some base the editing you're going to do. You can see the final scene and know you've got it right before everyone leaves the set.
Right.
So it's quite a boon.
So for a professional, it's a very good thing.
Yeah.
For the average user, why would you spend that money?
Yeah.
Honestly, why?
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of you will, because you buy everything Apple puts out, and I get that. That's
Final Cut used to be, the Final Cut Studio used to be like $2,500. And it's been dropping in price. Now, the $300 it is now, it's been that for 10 years, and all the upgrades have been free for like the last 10 or 15 years. So we'll see if they come out with 11 and charge a new price.
Or if they just make it
or if they just make a new just make a subscription or just make it new and everyone gets a free upgrade.
You know,
that's what we're used to.
Right. But they don't make money that way.
Yeah.
They don't make money that way. And that's why they're all going to it. It's why Microsoft has been telling their investors for years that they're going to subscription model. They just haven't pulled the trigger yet. Although we've got another article about another way they're going
to
make
money. Well, that's a way to double soak them. Keep them upgrading. And I'll say, all right, now we got something new.
Right.
Now you got to get rid of that and start with this.
You know,
and it's just like a gerbil on a wheel, you know, round and around.
Instead of paying a couple of $100 for a version of Windows, they charge you $50 a year. $50 doesn't seem like a lot, but in 4 years, they've made that original investment and the money will still keep coming.
Mm hmm.
And when you've got, you know, a couple of 100 million people paying you $50 a piece, that's not bad money.
That's it.
Final Cut Pro has an age rating of 4+.
4+.
You have to be at least 4 years old to run Final Cut.
Wow. Physically or mentally or emotionally?
Yeah.
How does it?
Yeah.
Four?
There's no objectionable objectionable material. So they don't have any rating lower than that.
Yeah, right. yeah, it's the stuff that they do, the stuff that they have available. We all have a threshold beyond which we will not go in paying for something.
Yep.
It seems for Apple people that is very high. That is a very high threshold. Lower for many Windows people, ludicrously low, approaching zero for Linux people. But Apple people don't mind paying. They pay a lot and they're happy to do it. And so I can see this being successful. The other thing is you may want to use it. I don't know contract is, but if you can, you know, buy it for a month.
Yeah, $4.99 a month.
And do your classwork.
And most people that would be using these programs would have a customer they can bill it to.
Right.
Yeah. And it's almost the same in any industry. You've got your Ford and Chevy people, and then you've got your BMW and Lexus people.
Right.
And then in each of those groups, they fight about each other.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerome from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jerome?
Hey, guys. I have a question about a piece of Relic software that I found at a garage sale the other day. Is it from a company called Xsoft, and it's called Global View Works Plus for Windows 3.1. And I'm wondering if there is still a Windows 3.1 emulator around that I could install it on to play with.
Oh, interesting.
Well, if you could find an old box and put Windows 7 on it.
There is a compatibility tab in Windows where you can tell it to run under an old version of Windows, but I don't know if it goes back that far.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. If you could find an old machine, put Windows 7 on it.
Yeah, Global View Xsoft is a division of Xerox now.
Go ahead.
I'm reading through the hardware requirements. It requires a 486 60 megahertz computer is recommended, and Pentium is supported.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
And I'm wondering if, like I said, if there's a Windows 3.1 emulator that runs on slightly more modern hardware that would.
There are a few Windows 3 emulators. There's one based on Java. PCGIS.org.
Yeah, I just booted it up. I'm looking at Windows 3.1. It's very weird.
Archive.org often has very old programs in their own emulator.
Right.
I was able to play Dark Castle, one of the very first games I bought on the Mac, where you're You're running through a castle throwing stones at bats.
Oh, jeez.
But if you have a do you have a Windows 10 or 11 machine?
Yes.
You can put VirtualBox on it, which is free. And run it in and then actually boot up Windows 3.1 in a virtual machine.
You got to find a Windows 3 installation disk and license code. There might
Windows
even,
3 didn't have an installation code.
The VirtualBox might even
just
have
a
pre-installed or pre-configured Windows 3 virtual disk.
Right.
So I should just follow the hints that VirtualBox tells me for installing on this and pretending it's a 3.1 machine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. That may be enough because there is an emulator. There's also a program called DOSBox Portable, which will do the same thing. And Windows 3.1, you can find online the installation media for Windows 3.1. You should be aware that it is not abandonware. Microsoft still holds the copyright to that. So, you know, if you have an old Windows 3.1 machine sitting around somewhere, then you have a legitimate right to use that license, but not to just randomly grab it and download it from somewhere.
It's piracy.
Yeah. So you should know that part right off the bat. But DOSBox and VirtualBox will both run Windows 3.1 if you have legitimate installation media.
It looks like there's actually a lot of them out there for nostalgic games, wanting to run all the old games from in the 80s and 90s that you grew up on.
Right.
And that's a lot where archive.org has some of those too in their own emulator.
Right. But you run those online.
Yeah. So JavaScript in your web browser is faster than a 90s era computer.
Yes, it is. Yes, it definitely is. Yeah, I'm running. This is so cool. I'm running Windows 3.1 in a window in my browser.
On your Chromebook.
This is my Linux box.
Oh, Linux. Okay. Well, it's still not Windows.
Right. Exactly. Right. That's hysterical. This is hysterical. And you can make it full screen if you want to. And I believe this closes it. Wow, who remembers how to do this stuff? Yeah, there you go.
All those key combinations that we're used to that are only 20 years old or not 40 years old.
Well, exactly. But yeah, those are your choices, I think, at this point.
All right, can you combine many of these into a link and put it up on the soundbite?
Yeah, I've put a couple of them up already.
Thank you, guys. That's a helpful starting point.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
For a long time, there was a market for Macintosh Classic ROMs, so you could make your own emulator.
Oh, yeah.
So people would dig through dumpsters and pull out broken computers to rip the ROM out to do a legal emulator.
Because as long as you actually had the ROMs, it was legal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how Apple tried to get around the problems that Microsoft had. You know, if you've got a disk of software somewhere, it is not impossible, and back in those days it was not even difficult, to clone that disk and be able to give it to anybody to do anything.
Do an X copy.
Apple tried to get around that by having much of the ROMs built into chips that were on the motherboard. You could not boot an Apple disk, an Apple operating system disk, without those routines that were in ROM.
Yep.
So as Steve said, people would take them out of dead machines and then work up an emulator board that would run those things. There were Hackintoshes for a long time.
One of the very first laptops, laptop clones, cost like $4,000. Because they had to start by buying a Macintosh and pulling the ROMs out and then building everything else. It was a convertible tablet where it actually flipped around and laid back flat with a touch screen. something Apple has yet to make.
Yeah, exactly. And nowadays, of course, you can emulate the look and feel of an Apple computer on Linux.
Yep.
With the right front end, and pretty much do everything you want to do. The software will be different, mostly, but not by much these days, depending on what you're using. Obviously, you're not going to use Final Cut Pro, a couple of those, but there are equivalents if you want them, or if you're doing Final Cut Pro, as Steve said, there's probably somebody you can bill, and so buying a real Mac is not a hardship. But that's the way those things work. You can get emulators these days for everything. You can even run real DOS, PC DOS.
Arcade emulators.
Yeah.
Are gonna, I thought I had the mute button on. Dark Castle from archive.org. there are stand-up arcade game emulators for mm-hmm. all those arcade games that either didn't have a PC version or it was different enough that I like that original arcade game.
Right. And there's a lot of those you can build or buy them. You can build them. There's a whole subgroup of Raspberry Pi people who do emulators mm-hmm. for all kinds of games. In fact, there's whole half the time when I go look at some cool new thing for the Raspberry Pi on YouTube, it's a game that somebody's and on this emulator, and then they do a review of another single board computer, and all they care about is the games. I don't care about the game. How well does the thing run Linux? How well does the thing connect to the internet? How fast is it? How much storage space do I get? No. Oh, well, you can run this
latency
game fine.
Is very low care. On this one. You know?
Yeah, I don't care. I don't care. But there's a huge community that does that already. So you should be able to any operating system, you can run some sort of virtual machine on. DOSBox or virtual machine, a virtual box or, any one of those. And if you have a legitimate copy of Windows 3.1 that you have obtained legally somewhere, you should be able to install that in
all
that virtual
discs.
Machine.
Remember all those discs?
I remember all those discs. And save it somewhere. There are places, back when I was doing, working at RIT, we were finding places... repositories of essentially ISOs, which are like a CD of every operating system. So, Windows 3.1, Windows 95, Windows 98, they're all out there, and you download it and you mount it as if it were a CD. Every operating system lets you take an ISO file and mount it as if it were a CD, and then you can install from that.
Yeah, I remember, though, for the longest time, we'd be going around installing Windows 3.1 and all those GD disk. And then they finally came out.
Failed.
And then they came out with finally the CD. And that was such a blessing in disguise. It was like, thank goodness. It took you long enough.
For the while, the Mac software came on 4 or 5 CDs. And then they went to DVDs. And then it came on 3 DVDs, and they went to double-layer DVD. And then they went to internet.
Then they went to the internet.
Now an OS download is 13 gigabytes.
Yeah.
13. That wouldn't even fit on a double-layer DVD.
That's exactly right. And that's, nowadays, again, we used to say, pretty much anybody can get by with dial-up internet. Every day we had to kill a robot to get on the internet, mm-hmm. listen to its dying screams. but it worked. But nowadays, most downloads, any download is so huge. You really need some sort of high-speed internet, and faster is always better. It's a whole new world every time there's any sort of upgrade. And one of the issues with running very old hardware is that you can't do a lot of the new things on it. Not because they won't let you or whatever, just because it's not capable anymore. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Whew, that must mean you're listening to Soundbites. Right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. You know, I will say, when we were talking about, we were talking with Steve about his motherboard and looking up all this stuff, and it came to the NUC. NUC is an Intel term, next unit of computing. And the NUC boxes themselves are tiny little hockey puck sized things. They're like
Apple TV.
Mac minis.
Smaller than that, some of them are.
Most of them. But yeah. That's the size people are more familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
That and Apple TV. It's that size. mine is taller because it includes space for a 2.5-inch hard drive.
It's no longer just a black square. Intel NUCs now come in various shapes, colors, sizes, and materials.
Mine came in black and gray. So I had two-tone.
Yeah.
But what's really nice about it is that, Steve and I talked about this, they are useful little utility devices. But once a company doesn't need that utility anymore, they tend to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
I bought one on eBay. It was a gig of RAM, a terabyte hard drive, $50. I put Linux on it, and it is amazing. It runs. It's an i5 processor. It runs great. It does everything I needed to do. I could use it as my desktop and not even notice it, but using it as essentially as a NAS drive, a network attached storage, mm-hmm. And to run some background files, things that I want to do, it's amazing.
Well, NUCs have been around for 10 years and maturing since then.
Right. And this is one of the early ones, and I know that, and I don't mind it. It runs great, and it's $50. You know what? If it lasts me a year, it was $50.
Yeah.
You know, and I got to play with it and learn about it. And as long as it's running, I will use it as yet another backup. So I'm pretty pleased with it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Pat. What's up?
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. A couple weeks ago, I noticed that my Google Pixel was low, the battery was low, and I couldn't find my charger. So I happened to notice that the charger I use for my Chromebook fit in the slot there for the phone. So I plugged it in, and I thought, well, I wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And all charged up and all that, but I kind of thought, is this okay to do this? Because they're different voltages, I think. I used to always, in the old days, with things you'd match up voltage and polarity and all that stuff, so... I admit it worked, so I tried it again recently. But every time I do it, I wish Nick was here because I'd like to ask him if it's a good idea. So since you're here, Nick.
Well, in general, here I am. In general, they should work fine
mm-hmm.
because mostly what those things do is step down the 110 to whatever, 5 volts, 3 volts, probably yep. 5. And they all use the same voltage coming out of the other end.
The bigger issue is the wattage.
Right.
Your computer charger might be 100 watts. The phone charger might be 5 watts.
Right.
If it's a well-designed phone and charger, it knows and stops charging. It only yeah. pulls the 5 watts
up to
it needs.
Up to right. the power limits.
In fact,
stuff.
that's becoming a new feature. You might see a phone that says quick charging. So you can put a 20-watt charger on it and get 80% charge in half an hour.
Right.
If you can find both of your phone charger again, there should be written on it somewhere in letters too small to see the voltage and the wattage, and you can see how much it is. But
I found it. But like just the other day, again, I was this time was upstairs, and I didn't feel like walking up.
Yeah.
So my laptop was down here, so I just plugged it in again, and I guess your answer is that since nothing bad happened, it was okay.
Yeah.
It should be okay. What can happen the other way is if you accidentally put your phone charger on your computer, it takes forever.
Right.
And in
fact,
it may discharge the battery faster.
Matter of fact, you can even hook it up to your, if you've got a USB port in your car, you can hook a USB cable that will work with the Type-C. That's a Type-C connector on the Pixel. And use that. It'll still charge it.
And because Type-C is pretty universal now, that's one of the reasons it works.
Getting even more universal.
Yeah.
Sorry, Apple.
Well, we're using it too. In fact, the couple generations of Apple computers had only Type-C, and everyone got mad that they have to, like, I've got three dongles here. So now they added MagSafe back, they added HDMI back, and they added the SD card back.
The MagSafe is what I love.
Yeah.
I wish
I love that idea.
All manufacturers would go to that.
They have to pay Apple.
There's a generic difference where it's a two-piece part, so one end stays in the computer and then the magnet clicks onto it. And I've seen enough of those sold that I think that gets around Apple's one-piece patent.
Right.
But so that is so when you trip on the cord, it pops off the computer instead of yanking.
Yeah,
the
instead of popping the darn connector.
Yeah. Right. But the one thing you don't want to do is plug your phone charger to the computer. As I said, it may not charge, and when you're using the computer, it may drain faster than the charger can put power into it.
Right. So the short answer is too late. I know. The short answer is it will work, but you shouldn't do it regularly.
Yeah. Okay. So I did just when I. Well, either couldn't find it, or I was in a terrible situation. I was too lazy to walk upstairs, so.
Well, yeah, okay, but don't be too lazy too often.
No, I'm not. I'm realizing that a little bit of movement is a good thing for me. So, okay, guys, as always, great answers, great show, and I'll hang up and let you move on to next.
All right, thanks, Pat. Have fun.
See ya.
Yeah, it's
That has been the problem with phone chargers for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were micro B, some of them were mini B, and you never have the right one. That actually was the EU that started standardizing on everything had to be mini B, and now they changed it to USB C, which bodes well because everyone was saying, well, what happens when USB D comes out?
Right.
So they can change it later when a better standard comes out.
Well, that's where I've got those. It's by, what is it, STAXIC. It's like a quick disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
You plug the little adapter in it, and it's got the magnetic. So I put that on my wife's because she was constantly, pulling it and wound up actually destroying the connector inside the phone, ruined a brand new phone within 4 months.
That's the problem, a phone or a computer, once you ruin that connection, it's gone.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I said, that's it. We wound up, it just sticks out a little bit, but yet she loves it. She can just quick step, and if she happens to move, it breaks away.
Yep.
And it's at least saving, buying a new phone.
You want to be careful which ones you buy. Some of them are just not high quality.
Yeah.
The ones I got were very nice and red.
They're a nice braided cable, good quality, made in USA. That's what I like.
Yeah. Oh, mine is a little different. Mine is just connectors. So there's one end that plugs into the computer and into the phone or any USB-C, and then the other end plugs onto any USB-C cord, and just those two pieces are magnetic to each other.
Oh, okay.
So it's a done deal there.
Use your existing cord rather than a separate cord.
Right. So that's kind of nice. And then you I have one in the car and one at home.
Yeah.
And everywhere else.
We had a company wanting us to carry their magnetic connectors like that, but they wouldn't go through the made for iPhone certification. So we, as an Apple dealer, couldn't carry them.
Right.
And also, you send a copy to Apple and let them look at it.
It's all you have to do.
Yeah.
I don't even know that it costs
$100. You get their blessing, and you can make some money off of it.
That's exactly right. All right. Microsoft is treating Windows 11 more and more like a billboard bus, finding ways to stick advertisements for its services along every surface and armpit of its operating system. In addition to ads in the start menu, the latest build, test build. Now, these are all test builds. And normally, we don't talk about rumors and we don't talk about test things, but This one's pretty close to going out, so we'll see what happens. The latest test build for Windows 11 includes notices for a Microsoft 365 trial and more in the settings menu. On Friday, Windows beta user and routine leaker Albacore shared several screenshots of the latest Insider Preview build 23451. 23451. Well, it's a better password than 12345.
Yeah.
These shots come from the ultra-early Canary test build and show a new home tab in settings that includes a notice to try Microsoft 365. This appears to link to a free trial, and there's where most people get confused. It's a free trial, so eventually it stops working, of the company's Office Apps Suite, which used to be called Microsoft Office and now apparently is just Microsoft 365. There's also a notice for OneDrive and another to ask users to finish setting up a Microsoft account, because heaven forbid you use your own email address, advertising that users can use the 365 apps and its storage cloud on desktop. Another notice in the Accounts tab also blasts users with a request to sign into their Microsoft account. These ads are very similar to other preview builds with so-called badging that show, or in my thought process, badgering, that shows up when users click on the Start menu. In that menu, the ads are a little more subtle and ask users to sign into your Microsoft account or advertise to users that they can use Microsoft 365 for free. Of course, ignoring that users have to input their credit card information to access their free month of Office apps, after which they will be charged. Mm-hmm. Why anybody would pay for an Office suite if they don't have to for business reasons?
They think they have to. That's the problem. They don't. Right. They've never looked at anything else. That's what they're used to.
When you can get LibreOffice for free, and it does all the same stuff, some of it a little bit differently.
Google Office is probably more well known to them,
right?
Because they're probably already using Google Mail. Although no, they could be using Exchange Mail,
right?
But Microsoft Office on the web is free, Docs.com,
and also very limited.
Yeah,
I can remember one time I was taken to small claims court because a lady had gotten a Gateway computer, and back then, those days, Microsoft would send a 30-day trial.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
That you could try out all these packages. Well, she got her machine, and she messed some stuff up. She sent it to us, and we had it. And then she went on vacation, so she was late coming, picking it back up. And when she did, all of a sudden, the following day, what'd you do to my computer? What do you mean? My Microsoft Office doesn't work anymore. You broke it.
Right.
No, ma'am. That was a trial. Did you pay for it? It was a trial.
Every time you
launched
it.
No, it was working fine. You broke it. Now, I want you to put it back so it's working. I'm not paying for it. Ma'am, it's...
That's why it doesn't work now. You didn't pay for it.
Every time you launched it, it said it was a trial and counted down the days left.
Right.
She took me to small claims court, and I thought the judge was going to burst out laughing. Because he says, so, all right, I want to hear your side. And I told him exactly what happened. And I says, and it states right on. And I had a picture. We found a picture that says 60-day, you know, a 30-day trial. And I said, trial period's up. If she wants it, she's got to have it. And she wants us to put it back. I can't.
How did you go into her house, into her computer, and turn it off?
Yeah, exactly.
So the judge said, have you been using it? Yeah. It was working, and it's over 30 days. What do you want them to do? Well, I want them to fix it. Then pay for it.
The fix is the fair. Here you go. All right, I'll fix it. It'll only cost you $300.
Right. That's the issue. These things, Microsoft doesn't give away products.
No.
When you buy a brand new machine that has Windows on it, that's not a free copy of Windows.
No.
You paid for that. Part of the price of buying that machine is you paid for Windows. You can go on to Dell's website. At least you used to be able to. I haven't tried it in a while. You used to be able to go on Dell's website and decide, I want this Dell laptop to come with Linux instead of Windows. And the price dropped by $150 because you were no longer paying for a Windows license.
I think you still can.
But the idea is that you pay for that.
Oh, yeah.
There ain't no free lunch. So
when
you get a free trial, it is just that. It is a trial.
Same with the antivirus. Quite often they include McAfee or Symantec in there. Again, they are free trials. They will run out, and no, you can't uninstall them and reinstall them.
Right. People try that all the time.
Yeah. Used to be you could set your clock back.
Right.
And that would work. Then, one thing we figured out, set your clock forward 10 years before you launch it the first time.
Oh, nice.
And then it's 30 days from then.
That's really nice.
That worked for a while.
That worked for a while. Now, of course, they all connect home and say, what's the
atomic clock.
Yep. Yeah, what's the time?
You need you need to
lock it anymore.
Yep.
And again, you know, we're also looking at Microsoft needs to make money. Remember, you're not Microsoft's customer. The shareholder is Microsoft's customer. You're the product. You're the money that comes in that they give to the shareholders. So they have been pushing their 365 apps recently. And yes, there are lots of updates that add, are you sitting down? AI features. And like that. And of course, they've retired that old Office moniker late last year in a rebranding and consolidation effort in order to fight off Google's own suite of cloud-based workspace apps, which are all free.
Yeah.
And work great for 99% of people. You know, I always get the edge problem people, right? I'm a lawyer. Okay, you can't use the free stuff. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're a lawyer. You can afford to buy Microsoft's
product. Yeah, hello.
Same with photographers. I must use Adobe
Photoshop.
Something. Okay, yes, you do. You're not an average user. You need this. The average user doesn't.
Right.
Stop pretending you're normal, because you're not.
Be unique like everyone else.
Exactly. and you know, the problem for Windows 10 holdouts is that Microsoft is no longer providing new feature updates. They want you to buy 11. They want you to move up. They want you to spend money. They don't. Their shareholders are unhappy if you don't spend money.
You know, that's one thing I got to admit. You know, what was it? Just last year when my one computer died and I wound up getting the new one. And it came with Windows 10. And every maybe 2-3 weeks, I keep getting this great notice. Sorry, but this machine is not up to Windows 11 standards. Yeah. Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
The NUC that I bought had Windows 10 on it. And, of course, I booted it up the first time because, you know, I just wanted to see what was there. I booted it up, and the very first thing it did was say, Windows 10 must update to Windows 11. I have my Windows 11 here on this Xubuntu drive, thumb drive, so I'll be updating to that in a minute.
Then you should get $100 back for not using Windows on it.
Out of my $50 investment.
Wasn't that the thing with Dell for a while? Where
Dell did that, yeah.
Yeah, send everyone to Microsoft to get money back for not putting Windows on the computer?
Yep.
Well, and that actually goes back to an egregious contract that Microsoft had. When you, as a manufacturer, would buy Microsoft Windows for your product, you had to install it on you paid a license for every product you sold, whether it was installed or not.
Right.
And so you just installed it on every product. If you wanted to sell something without Windows, it had to be a different SKU.
Yep.
So Dell got tired of paying for Windows that they weren't using because they were selling Unix and Linux machines. A lot of the high-end servers are already Unix.
Right. And we fought that fight for years as well. You buy a server and it comes with Microsoft Server. We're not using Microsoft Server. We don't want Microsoft Server. And that costs a whole lot more than $150. I'll tell you that right
now.
Oh,
heck yeah.
So we eventually found the right SKU. We sat down with our Dell rep and we said, you know, we're not going to buy from you anymore because you're adding at least $1,500 to every sale that we don't need to spend.
Yeah.
Well, hold on. You know, there's a different SKU you can use. Well, you're telling us that now? Interesting.
Yeah.
So if you're buying a machine these days, like I said, I bought that Nook $50 and it came with Windows 10. Okay. So now I have a Windows 10 product tee that I'll probably put on a virtual machine.
There you go.
So I can play with Windows 10. That's easy enough.
Windows Server 2022 Data Center Edition is $6,155.
Yeah.
Does not include client licenses.
That's exactly right.
Every seat is a separate fee.
Yep. So, I immediately got rid of it. But when I bought a new Dell, I went onto the last time, this was years ago, but I bought a new Dell and I went on their website and I specifically said, no Windows, no operating system. They took $150 off it.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. You're paying for Windows when you buy a machine. So if you use Windows, well, good for you. But if you're a Linux user, or you're going to put Flex on it or something like that, get the one without an operating system. Why not?
Yep.
Save yourself a little bit of money.
And frustration trying to get,
trying to get it off.
Yeah, get it off and put it on. Yeah, no, that'd be, saves yourself headaches. And you've now got a clean machine. Nothing else. There's no other residue or Windows products on there that to hang around and just have it as a... Because they'll test the hard drive. I mean, they still run it through a battery of tests and everything else, spin up and all that other stuff, check through the BIOS. They can do plenty of that stuff. They don't need an operating system on it.
Right.
So they can go ahead, test all that out, so you don't have to worry about, well, it's not going to have anything. It's still good.
Yep.
You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
You can then set it all up. Put your thumb drive in just to have it boot off of that. Go right up to the OS that you want to load and do it.
Yep. Easy enough to do. Save yourself some money. Again, not for everybody. If you're happy with Windows, good for you. You keep using it. Absolutely keep using it. But if you're going to be changing the operating system anyway, I haven't installed Windows on anything except the virtual machine 30 years. I think.
Well, the only thing that, well, so you're good. The one that, through talking so much about it, drove me to finally, that was it. After that one last crash, I said, the heck with this. And I did a little research and found, because the only thing that was holding me back was the Quicken.
Yep.
And then I turned around and found Money Dance, which, oh, by the way, is free. It's been around for a long time, works on all operating systems, and it's just the same as Quicken. That's done deal. I can get rid of Windows in a heartbeat, don't need it, don't want to look back, and that's okay with me.
Yep. And you'll find, like I've said before, if you've got an old machine sitting around in a closet, why? Throw Linux on it and play with it. It doesn't, if you're not using the machine anyway, if it's an old machine, it's not updating, you aren't using it, sitting in the closet, go ahead and play.
Yeah.
Stretch your brain, stretch your muscles.
It feels like
head.
We're back in the tinkering days.
Exactly.
Well, the thing that is cool, too, is you can try the different flavors. Put it, flash sticks are, so cheap nowadays. You can buy a 5-pack. Load up the different, versions of Linux that you want, and you can put it in and test drive it. You don't like it, you pull that drive, flash drive out, put another one in, reboot, do a temporary setup and run it and see which flavor you like.
And the only thing you have to remember is that on the thumb drive version, it's compressed, so it's very slow to load anything because it has to uncompress it. But that's only because it's on that flash drive. Once you install it on the hard drive, it's just like any other operating system, boots right up, everything comes up fast, it's all good. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, I want to thank Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco, I want to thank everybody who called in, I want to thank the people in the chat for at least partially sort of keeping to the stuff we do, that makes sense. So thank you all. But listen, be good to one another, will you? Let's make sure that you people are happy and healthy and keep yourselves good for another week, will you? And we'll see you next week on the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another.